sunshine, little Uber, liver, liver, liver. Good evening.
Welcome to As the Worm Turns. This is KVNF's gardening show. My name is Jill, and I've got a special guest here tonight, Don LaRoe. Hi, Don.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. Thanks for coming in. Great to see you. Don is from Zephros Farm and Garden here in Paonia, and this is a call-in show, so I'm going to give the numbers right now, 527-4868-1866-KVNF-NOW. And Don, Zephros Farm and Garden, you are an organic farm, is that correct?
Yep, we are a certified organic farm, that's right.
All right, and you grow all kinds of things right outside of Paonia here.
We do. We have grow a ton of vegetables and also a tremendous amount of flowers.
Yeah, beautiful flowers, right. And so you've got about how many acres actually in production up there?
We have about 5 acres that we grow the vegetables and flowers on. There's some fruit trees in that mix as well. And then there's about 17 acres of hay that we have as well.
Oh my gosh, that's a lot of hay up there.
It's a lot of hay. It's a good crop to have. We grow a lot of alfalfa that we try to integrate back into the farm.
Okay, and you do that by using it to compost?
Compost, or mulch. Sometimes we just spread it and till it into the fields.
Right.
As well.
Now, I remember back a few shows ago, we were talking about biodynamic farming and kind of keeping things contained in the farm. And is that a little bit of that concept?
Yeah, it definitely is. It's buying compost in and trucking it in is expensive. So, you know, we try to make more and more of our own. It's a challenge to do, get the amount of nutrients we need on our farm.
Right.
Just from the on-farm sources. But we have some goats, so we use their manure as well. And then the alfalfa just sort of helps to close that loop.
Mm-hmm. Sure. What other kind of farm animals do you have out there?
Just goats and chickens. Sometimes we'll bring in sheep or pigs to raise sort of seasonally. This year we didn't do that. We just a pretty thin amount of animals right now.
Right. And is that sometimes to help work the land a little bit or more just a whole farming type of?
Honestly, the goats are just so we can have milk and make our own cheese. And
sure. Sure. Nice.
And same with the chickens. Mm-hmm. You know, we used to do a little bit more commercial with the chickens. It just sort of, you know, you can be over diversified and have a little too much going on, which I think is where we got to at a certain point.
Right.
And, so more and more we tend to focus on our flowers and just certain vegetables, which allows us to sort of grow those things very well and not be spread too thin.
Sure. And you do it well. You've got some gorgeous produce.
Thanks.
And flowers. I'm going to give the numbers again. Listeners, 527-4868-1866, KVNF now. A question for Don. And let's talk about those beautiful flowers a little bit because it's winter, but you are thinking flowers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We spent a large portion of today looking at flowers online.
Uh-huh.
It's the time of year where you got to order any bulbs that you're going to plant. It's actually, commercially speaking, it's a little bit late, really.
We should have had
all of our bulbs ordered earlier, but the fall just won't quit. So
Right. This weather's kind of crazy.
We've been kept busy, so outside. So yeah, we'll see. You know, hopefully we'll get the things that we want. That's the problem, is that things sell out.
Sell out quickly, yeah. And you're looking to start planting some of those flower seeds maybe first day of the new year, maybe.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right around the beginning of January is when we'll start. It's not a lot of things that get seeded out then. And some things, you know, we'll stick outside in the snow and let them get cold. And before they'll come inside the greenhouse to germinate. And then we'll start planting up one of our high tunnels, which is just a big unheated greenhouse. We'll have that. The first one will be planted up by about mid-February.
And that's your heated?
That's an unheated greenhouse.
Oh, it's unheated.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. That's real early.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll start all that stuff in the propagation house, which is our heated greenhouse.
Okay.
Soon.
Yeah, so you've got this whole series of steps that happens. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do a lot of successions of crops. So say snapdragons, we'll grow a succession of those in the greenhouse early season and then we'll grow another succession and maybe sometimes two successions outside and possibly even a third succession or a fourth succession in the greenhouse for the fall.
Wow.
So that you can sort of have a continual harvest of, you know, flowers that are popular.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's a lot of snapdragons. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. And you can do the same thing with vegetables, of course, as well. You know, something like kale, which is something we still have growing in our greenhouse. You know, we probably do six or seven successions of kale throughout the season.
Wow. That's great. And you mentioned that you're just selling off now your last crops. And you take your produce to market, is that correct?
We do, yeah. We we do have a Telluride Farmers Market, and then we also do deliveries over to the Roaring Fork and, you know, to the Trading Post, other places, Hardin's and places around here as well.
Right.
So, yeah, we're sort of just selling out the last of the fall crops, like the root crops, like onions and shallots and Napa cabbage and carrots and beets and... you know, it's interesting trying to sell into these skiing communities, you know, tourist towns, because they require people and the people aren't there. They're just starting to arrive. So, you know, I've just started getting calls from chefs wondering what I have left because they're literally just opening their doors this week.
Oh, sure. You know, it's fantastic to go to one of those towns and be in a restaurant and see on the menu board food from somewhere like Zephyr's and other local farms. I just love that.
That's so cool. There's a lot of good customers over there who appreciate having good product.
Right. And you're a little bit about that whole farm to table philosophy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And let's see. So we've got flowers going, and we were talking, you know, with Lance a couple weeks ago about planning, and he's, of course, on hiatus, but this warm weather has you working outside still.
Yeah. Lance is probably skiing up on the mesa while,
right.
while I'm still outside working. Yeah. Right now, it's a lot of planning for us. You know, and I think what we do is obviously in a big spreadsheet and Excel sort of database have all the information. And I mean, I think a home person could do that too if they were so inclined or really
sure.
just sort of write down, you know, what they want. Kind of information we enter in is what is the crop? Is it a tomato or is it a carrot or is it a kale or a snapdragon or whatever? And then... How long from when the time it germinates to when the time it's you're going to bloom or you're going to pick it, and then you have to balance that with when can it be planted either into a greenhouse or outside. So you set your date based on that information, then you can sort of work backwards to say, okay, well then I'll have to start that seed in the greenhouse in March, or
right.
Or I'll seed it out in the field in May, and that allows you to, you know, really keep track of when a plant's going to come up. Something like a tomato will keep producing until it freezes. But, you know, some things like kale, it can, but it's also, it's nice to have fresh growing kale, particularly for the market. You know, if you don't eat a lot of
sure.
kale in your home garden, that might not be necessary, but, or carrots, you know, it's nice to have several successions of carrots. And so you want to sort of have a sense of, well, these carrots will be done by, you know, the middle of July, so I'll need to have another set of carrots coming on if you want to keep having carrots coming out of your garden.
Yeah, boy, that's a lot of planning, absolutely. So tell me about doing all this planning, and do you rotate those crops? That's one of the things that we talked about is rotating, not planting the same thing in the same place all the time.
We do, yeah. I mean, it's obviously part of the organic standards to keep track of that stuff, but it also just makes a lot of sense. So we actually keep track on a bed to bed, what was in this bed last year, what was there the year before. And we have to sort of even do that to a more of a degree because we have certain pests is one of the main reasons to think about that. Doing that is that you can build up certain pests in certain places. And
right.
Some of the pests that you can have on flowers will then also enjoy themselves with some vegetables
sure.
as well, and back and forth. So, I mean, it's also nice having the flowers because you create the diversity and you can bring in beneficial insects sort of
right,
into
the
garden.
Right, the good stuff.
Mm-hmm. So we can do sort of not necessarily companion planting, but put things next to each other with some sort of forethought.
Right.
So that's part of that whole planning process too, is where are these things going to get planted?
Yeah. And so as part of your thinking too, always about bug control, I mean, that's me right now. Lance was telling me, you know, to get my leaves cleaned up because I was going to leave this habitat for the bugs. And I'm just looking out there thinking more grasshoppers than last year.
Yeah. You know, I shouldn't say this out loud, but we've been pretty lucky with bugs. I mean, we certainly have some bugs. We have a program of releasing lace wings.
Okay.
And they'll start to come in to the farm really the beginning, middle of January. And then as these greenhouses come online, we'll release the lace wings. And they're a really good, they're really good at eating a broad diversity of insects that we have problems with. Aphids sort of being the one that people are pretty commonly
right.
know.
Are those, is that a ladybug or what kind of,
no,
what is a lace
it's
wing?
A green lace wing. It's, it eats more. Ladybugs are pretty particular to eating just aphids, but the nice thing mm-hmm. about the lace wing is that it'll eat a lot of different, bad bugs.
Yeah.
And so we start to build up a population, and we do it on our starts that are coming in that we're growing in the propagation house in the heated greenhouse. And then as those things get put out into the field or into the other greenhouses, they'll bring those good bugs, the lace wings, along with them. So that
right.
that seems to help a lot. You know, there's there's always some bug every year that's, you know, you just aren't going to win. And grasshopper seemed like a pretty big pest for us last year,
right?
This last season, but we did all right actually with the grasshoppers. They seem to be in other places on our farm, and so we've been spreading that the Nolo bait for a few years.
Yeah, that seems to work real well. I know Lance had used Nolo bait and doesn't have any grasshopper problem, and he was pretty diligent about it though. For several years.
For years,
like
yeah.
you say. Yeah.
yeah. And I think we are starting to see the effect of it. You have to spread it at the right time, and you've got to spread it for several years before you're going to see the effect. But I think, you know, this year was sort of a testament to that, because we really didn't have very bad grasshopper damage, and it would seem
yeah.
to be the talk around town. Everybody was not happy with the grasshoppers.
Oh,
but.
Yeah, was the talk of the town. I would find grasshoppers in my kitchen if I left the door open. It was crazy. But I'm glad to hear that, and I'm glad to hear Nolo bait, and I think Lance's advice is start early and apply often.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you got to put it out at the right time, because it's
right.
it's a protozoan that has to be consumed by the grasshopper at a very particular time in their development. So you can miss it. The hard part is the people who make it don't start until it's being designed to put out into the field. So
right.
we really actually need it to be put out in the greenhouse. So it's a little tricky. We wind up using some older stuff, but it seems to be working.
Yeah. You'd like it just a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, with the weather and how the weather's different every year, we're certainly having a nice warm spell after that cold freeze, but do you keep records of what happens on your farm, or is it all up here in the noggin?
I wish we had better records. I wish I was that old codger who had a little notebook or some, you know, I guess I should have an app that I would enter it all into or something like that. But,
yeah.
You know, in terms of the weather, we really haven't kept track of stuff that much, because it just, you know, honestly, in some respect, it's almost as if it doesn't matter, because things are going to be
different
changing
next
and
year.
Different so much
yeah.
that, you know, when there was a normal, you know, everyone says, well, it's just year isn't normal. And I feel like since we've been growing here now for this will be our 12th full season growing here.
Oh, fabulous.
You know, I don't think I've seen a normal year.
Right.
I don't know if I would know what that looks like. So,
change,
you know,
is normal, folks.
I mean, it is in our head to a certain extent, but you know, there's certain, you don't know. You can try to plant your tomatoes earlier, hoping to get them in the field, you know, a few weeks earlier, but that's going to be the year that it's going to be that long, wet, cold spring. So then
yeah.
you're sitting on a bunch of plants in a greenhouse, and you're having to water them and deal with them and,
yeah,
you know, all that. So
yeah, it's kind of just like, figure it out the best you can.
Yeah. Some things go in early, some things will go in late. It's just sort of always a, it's always a bit of a gamble. I mean, and that's why so many of the small farms around here grow such a diversity of crops, because inevitably something's not going to do well and something else is going to do well.
Right. And being that size that you are, you kind of want to zero in on what those crops are that do well for you, because we were just talking about that. And in your backyard garden, you can pretty much take some risk, maybe with flowers and things that you're interested in growing, but you kind of don't want to take those big risks.
Yeah, it's, you know, when we were talking about adding in new varieties of things, it's one thing if you just get those seed catalogs that have started to come in the mail and you just choose whatever you want, because it looks so pretty.
The wish book.
And it's, you know, it's got the sexy pictures, you know, then and then you're doomed. But so we've tried over the years to sort of know we always have some stuff that we're experimenting with and trying to grow, you know, different things. And you know, some years we'll put in a bunch of different melons to try to figure out, hey, gosh, which melons do we really like? Which ones grow well?
Sure.
And, you know, some years it's not a melon year, and other years it's a great melon year. But when we grow with 5 acres of fruit and vegetables and flowers, you sort of have to have things that you can expect to have.
Right, exactly.
And what's going to sell.
Yeah,
you know?
And you've got that fruit in there with the flowers, the fruit trees in there. And is that a companion thing, or is it just
work kind of
well
in their
with
own,
your land?
They're
or?
Kind of in their own little area. Mm-hmm. You know, we really, it's sort of, as we say, it's the bottom of our totem pole, because there's so many other people growing amazing fruit here that we'd rather trade flowers for good,
yeah, for
good
some
fruit
of the awesome
than to
fruit.
Try to have to grow really good fruit too.
Yeah, sure. I just wondered if that was one of those things that you try to plant together type of thing.
No, it's mm-hmm. they're sort of off in their own acreage.
Yeah. Do you use a planting calendar?
Like the biodynamic calendar?
Yeah.
We mm-hmm. do. We do try to use the biodynamic calendar. It's easier to do in the early season when you can be a little more flexible. But, you know, as we get into March and April and you have to get stuff seeded out, you know, if there's not a fruit day coming for, you know,
right, you
a week, then, you know, we kind of combine the fruit and flower days. So we tried, if it's on a flower day, you know, obviously we plant all our flowers on flower days,
right.
But we have way too many flowers to plant to actually get them all in on flower days.
Yeah.
So then we'll look at, say, okay, well, maybe we can do it on a fruit day, because it's the same idea. It's the same energy. Or if we just have to get it in, today's the day, you know, especially with weather and all that, mm-hmm. the rest of the stuff and labor, you know, there's so many variables that will dictate when things happen on top of the biodynamic calendar. We'll say, you know, we'll look at potentially, you know, weeding those crops on a flower day or a fruit day.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes it's hard to let the calendar, lots of stuff going on in life.
Yeah. And harvesting, I think I hear, you know, Lance and other people on the show talking about harvesting crops on those days. And I think mm-hmm. that's probably for us, that's one of the more difficult ones, because, you know,
sure.
we really are harvesting for markets, and we're harvesting, you know, we just have certain days that we can harvest, you know, really.
Right. You've got all kinds of things happening with
it. Do that. Other stuff. So, you know, that part gets tricky.
Yeah. Do you do any seed saving? Lance is really into seed saving and meticulous about it, and it's fascinating to me.
You know, we save some of our flower seeds. Mm-hmm. Some of them are self-pollinated plants that make it easy to save the seeds. A lot of the stuff we have, you know, we just have so much diversity that it's kind of a hard thing to set up. I have a tremendous respect for Lance for being able to sort of fit both of those in. And there's a great farm over in Boulder who does both vegetable production and seed production. But it's really too... To do them both well is are really sort of two completely different tracks of growing.
Sure, I can see that.
Particularly with some vegetables, it's just hard with the cross pollination that can happen. That you've got to really then you're really setting yourself up only to grow things for seed, and then you can't grow anything else, say for harvest for sales.
Right. So a little bit different thinking of it as the market garden concept is what you are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and really we would probably have to open up more land to really do seeds well.
Right.
Grow the right amount of plants, and as well just make sure that we're not contaminating the genetics with other things.
Right. Sure. Now, I know I've heard of some special things you do with kids visiting your farm, and this is so important for kids to understand where their food comes from and what food is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a lot of kids that come through the farm, a lot with the help of the Camp Foundation. I think my favorite day is when we bring in the 100 kindergarten kids from Garnet Mesa Elementary. And I always get to milk the goats. And when you start squirting the milk out and the kids realize that that's where milk comes from, you know, it's really.
I bet that's fun.
It's, you know, great. And we talk about milking elephants and mice and cows. You know,
that sounds like my kind of party.
So yeah, they dig to play with the worms and yeah, I think it's really good. And we have, we'll have high school groups visit and also all sorts of different age kids come out to the mm-hmm. farm. And I think it's a really important thing to get kids out there and to really understand, you know, where their food comes from.
Right. Because they can actually spend a day or more out there. I know that your farm had donated some certificates to one of our auctions, and it was where you could spend the whole day out there learning about all kinds of stuff in the garden, and you're actually getting their hands dirty, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. No, that's the idea, is to sort of get the kids out there and you know, do everything from planting and weeding to harvesting and cooking, really, you know, mm-hmm. getting them to connect that farm to plate concept in place.
Right. And just get that in their brain right now. Yeah. Great. We've got a caller on the line. Awesome. Hey, Skip in Paonia has a question for you, Don. Hi, Skip.
Skip.
Hey, Jill. Thanks for the show. And I just wanted to ask Don, how did you get your start in what you're doing with Zephyros? And do you have a background in farming from like your parents, or like, how did you get started doing what you do? And I'll listen off air.
All right. Great question.
Yeah. Thanks, Skip. You know, I grew up, my mom and her neighbor, they had about an acre and they would grow vegetables together. So we spent a lot of time, you know, it wasn't a huge plot, but for them, it was a pretty decent size. And we would spend a lot of time putting food up, and we had a guy that kept bees, and we'd, you know, do a couple sheep. That was sort of until I was about 6 or 7. I always say somewhere back in Leroux, France, there, I feel like I'm sort of re-embodying someone from centuries ago, because otherwise, no, there really isn't agriculture in my background. I studied biology in college, and had a great ecology professor that taught us the fundamentals of ecology by looking at conventional farms and organic farms and sort of really trying to understand the difference between the two and showing ecological principles. Mm-hmm. And then got involved in some sustainable agriculture tours in college and started seeing different farms. Always had a big garden wherever I was. So
it started as a young boy, and then it just sort of stuck with you, and that's great. That's just what you're doing for these kids. That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, great question, Skip. Thanks for throwing that out there. And this is a family operation.
Oh, yeah. This is my wife, Daphne, and I, and then our kids, Sophie and Diego, help out on the farm as well. They particularly love coming to the farmer's market, and I think this year was one of the years where they really helped out a lot, and our sales increased, and I'm pretty sure it's just because the kids were selling the produce and taking the money.
Yeah, those kids.
There's something about, you know.
They're kind of magic, aren't they?
Watching a kid do math at, you know, that age. All these people just, they love that, and you know, Sophie and Diego were great at, they would turn around and have ladies just with buckets full of flowers for me to add up. And
yeah.
So
as they're getting older, they're really getting into different aspects of it. And
they do
the business a little bit too.
They do. They like going to market.
Uh-huh.
They get paid a little bit. That helps as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Meeting people and out there schmoozing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
So any exciting goals for Zephyros next year as we get into, I mean, you really have a short respite here.
Yeah, I mean, we don't really, I mean, that's kind of the joke. Everyone says, oh, what are you guys doing? You're just nothing. You're just hanging
right.
out. And last week we finished dividing 1,200 dahlias, and that took a long
Whoa.
Time. So we dug 1,200 dahlias, and then you have to cut them up and pack them into sawdust and store them in the basement. So, I mean,
so you that, dig the bulb up.
Yeah.
And then you cut it down the middle.
Kind of looks like, imagine a sweet potato, but it's like 6 or 8 sweet potatoes sticking off of a stem. And,
sure.
It's kind of got, the sweet potato has, or the dahlia, so it has a neck, and the neck kind of comes up to a little fat part that's attached to the stem, and you cut
okay.
that off, and then that part will become a whole new plant next year.
Okay. 1,200 of those babies, huh?
Yeah, we love our dahlias. They're hard not to love.
Yeah.
They're good money too as well. So for us, for the weddings, I mean, I think for us, we're always looking to add more weddings. You know, we're like a lot of small farms, we're trying to find things to do with our products that add mm-hmm. value to them.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause really part of making a successful small farm is having value added products. And for us, it's, you know, any of these flowers individually, are not worth that much. But when you can put them together in an arrangement or into someone's bridal bouquet,
Absolutely.
All of a sudden it's worth a lot more. So that's and we enjoy that part. It sort of allows us to be artistic and
yeah,
the design little, part is a lot of fun for us as well. And so,
yeah, your flowers are absolutely stunning. I love them. I'm looking forward to them coming up in the spring here. So, Don, thanks so much for coming in. Zephyros Farm and Garden, and been great speaking with you and learning about your farm and what's going on out there. And hope to see you again soon.
Okay, sure.
All right, happy gardening. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Next is the holiday auction, so stay tuned.
Pocket Mazda, which you can make go slow and faster. I don't know who you took a shine to, or who you're about to make a sign to. I got a gal that I love so. Low, little low, and low.